Hi there. This is a CPD in 140 podcast on Edutalk Radio, and I'm Ian Guest. I'm currently engaged in doctoral research looking at teacher professional learning supported through Twitter. If you're interested and would like to know more, head over to my research blog, cpdin140.wordpress.com. One of the methods I'm using is semi-structured interviews, and if participants give the permission, I'll post our resulting chat here on Edutalk. If you're interested in being involved, I'd be delighted to hear from you. Just drop me a tweet or a DM at Ian in Sheffield on Twitter. Chris Bailey is a former teacher and assistant head in a primary school in the UK, and at Mr. Chris J. Bailey on Twitter. Chris sits a couple of metres away from me in the office here at uni and kindly offered to be interviewed without any arm twisting or pleading on my part. I'll let Chris provide you with more of his background as we get underway. Well, thanks for being involved, Chris. I guess the best place to start is just as a quick reminder to quickly say that this is, as you're probably aware, research into teachers and their use of Twitter in a professional learning context as they see it. So it's I'm trying to unpick that. So your previous history as a teacher will be useful in this. Yep. So I guess that's probably a good place to start. Could you give me a little bit of background about what your history within education is in terms of teaching and so forth?
Yes. So I did a PGCE, which was, I can't remember years, but about 12 years ago, maybe 13. And then got a job at a primary school where I stayed for my full teaching career of 9 years or 8 years, one or the other. I started with a job in reception in year one. After a couple of years, moved to a mixed year 4-5 class, and then moved to year six when I also, for the final year, became assistant head. I think that was the title rather than deputy, as if it makes any difference. And then after that, left to do my PhD. So my full teaching career was in one school. With a number of different roles within that. And I kind of never moved because I liked the people I worked with in the school. So although every so often I'd look at jobs, I didn't feel like I needed to move. I suppose I kind of developed by taking on different classes and also by doing some master study at Hallam, which did along at the same time. I kind of feel like I'm justifying why I stayed at the same school, whereas actually no one really cares, and it's fine. And I think that comes from feeling like, at the time, I remember when I had my first Ofsted, in the third year of teaching, the Ofsted inspector afterwards said, I advise you to start looking for other jobs because those who stay in the same school don't move on in their career. And he was trying to be friendly and nice. And I just remember thinking, should I be moving? And then I realised that I could do whatever I wanted and my life was my own. And so I didn't look to move. And then at the end, I came to the end of my teaching career and I did supply while I was doing my PhD, and in theory would still do supply now if I was asked at the school I was from. But I suppose I think of my teaching career in terms of primary teaching having ended, really. I don't think I think of myself as a teacher now, although I do lecturing and things. I don't teach regularly enough to feel like I am a teacher. So I think teaching feels like it's in the past for me.
That's an interesting perspective. And you distinguish then from what you said between teaching and lecturing as being two separate things.
I think there's related things, but if someone asked if I was a teacher, I wouldn't say that teaching... I am teaching adults, but we have a different word for it, don't we? So we say lecturing. Even though I'm not lecturing most of the time, I'm doing seminars, so I'm seminaring. But there isn't a word for that, I don't think, is there?
Oh, you just get creative on
seminaring. I'm doing seminars. That's what I do mostly. I don't do that many lectures, but we call it lecturing, and you are a lecturer, aren't you? Whether or not I'm that as well, because I don't do that very often. I only do that a couple of days a week. But being that I don't do teaching, as in primary school teaching, any days a week at the moment, it's hard to know, isn't it? How you when do you? It's all a decision based on how you use words, isn't it? When could I still be? I'm still qualified as a teacher, so I could still call myself a teacher. And some people might finish teaching and still call themselves teachers, and that's fine. But for me, I don't feel like I am a teacher anymore. That doesn't mean that people who leave teaching for a bit can't still be, but I'm just not. I think I've moved on to different things. Not necessarily better, but just different.
Teacher emeritus.
Yeah. If I knew what that meant, I'd probably call myself that, yeah.
Okay, well, that's quite an interesting sequence, I think, because you've got a number of different perspectives, and each of those might provide a different outlook onto what I'm looking into. So that'd be helpful to get that.
Yeah.
Well, while we're on the topic of history, then, can you give me a history of your use of Twitter? Where did that start, and through to where you think it is now, I guess?
Yep. So I suppose I think I signed up for Twitter quite early on when I first heard about it, as I tend to do with stuff, because I like signing up for stuff and seeing what it's about and what it's for. In my remembered history of events, I think Facebook was there first for me. It was there first in the world, wasn't it? But I signed up for Facebook and kind of became aware of how to use that and what that could be for. And then Twitter came along as a thing, so I signed up for that and did the thing of tweeting out, hey, I'm new on Twitter, and then nothing really happened because there weren't that many people on it, and so I probably gave it a rest but left my account open. And then I think I probably came back into Twitter more from the point of view of looking at teacher stuff on it rather than Facebook, which I use for personal things. I probably used it in a slightly more professional capacity. I can't really remember how I got to that point where I used it for teaching things. And I tended to use it for reading what other people were doing, probably mainly around using technology in the classroom, I suppose, and people sharing ideas and sharing their blogs. So I suppose that linked most directly to my interest in using technology in the classroom and also my role as ICT coordinator. So I used it like that. I set up a school Twitter account at some point, and we used to use that for tweeting out things that school were doing. I can't remember if I had... I think I had a class Twitter as well. I think I maybe started with the class one, and then we went for a school one and used to tweet out things they were doing on their blogs, which seems like another person and another time now. It doesn't feel like I did that because it's really hard to remember doing it, but I did. Not many people would look at it, to be honest, and it didn't have many followers, and I'm not sure the class stuff, I'm not sure of the value of that at the time, because I'm not sure many parents had it and looked at it. It was fairly early on in Twitter's life. I think the school blog, as the school Twitter ended up getting more followers and became a thing that they still carry on now after I've left. My personal account didn't really come into it. I kind of kept my personal account separate from school, so I wouldn't kind of expect parents and people to know about my personal account and follow me. And I didn't really say anything very interesting on it, I don't think. I think I used it more as a way of reading other people's things. when I was interested in doing that. And then I left teaching, and I think after a bit I set up a new Twitter account for now, because the amount of people I was following were from a very specific time when I was looking for specific things, and it seemed easier just to start with a new Twitter account when I was doing my PhD and set up a new group of people. There was some crossover in people that I followed, I suppose, but largely it was a new purpose. So I suppose my old Twitter account involved me following lots of teachers who were sharing a certain type of content, but my interest moved on from that. So rather than just unfollowing a load of people, I just started a fresh Twitter account. I presume the old one's still there in limbo, hanging there with embarrassing things that I would cringe about now, but as you do about anything in your past often, I think.
So the two, well, multiple Twitter accounts actually that you've been involved with, created, yeah, and authored in a sense, all serve different purposes. And there isn't a single thing that it does necessarily, even though it's used in an educational context in each case.
No, those Twitter accounts did different things, and still being involved in see, I'm not a teacher, but I'm involved in education now. And I'm not saying that because I happen to teach in education, but because I am, I suppose, an educator. Twitter can be used in lots of different ways. So yeah, I used it for a different purpose when I was a teacher too. I use it now. I used it when I was a teacher. I used Twitter to communicate stuff on a class blog. I used it in a different way for my personal thing. I think there's crossovers because I would also use Twitter personally sometimes, because it's impossible to separate these things, I think, sometimes, because you use a Twitter account as a teacher, but then some of the other teachers from schools get Twitter accounts and follow you, and you follow them, but then you use it for communication that isn't about the purpose you set it up for. So it becomes lots of different things, and different Twitter accounts become different things, and you use it on different days in different ways. So I suppose there's a reason for setting it up. But I also think there's you don't necessarily have a specific purpose for setting it up when you set it up. Or if you do, then that changes. So it's, I think it's really hard for me to pin down how I did use Twitter and what I intended to use Twitter for, because you kind of get taken down different paths as you use it. And I do now.
So there's been a degree of evolution in there as well.
Yes.
Since you brought that up, and you said different days, different ways, a typical Twitter session for you then probably doesn't exist. But what might some of the things you do, if you'd got someone standing looking over your shoulder while you were engaged on Twitter, during the course of 24 hours, mm-hmm, what kind, or a week, what kinds of things would they have seen you do?
Are we talking now or when I was a teacher?
Either, whichever sort of you recall, or both. Or
I think it's easier to recall now because we're here. So at the moment, I use Twitter, I suppose, mainly for making connections with people and for reading interesting stuff vaguely related to my academic work, but also more broadly. For example, I tweet, but in the last couple of days, what have I tweeted? I was at the protests in Sheffield against Trump last night, and I tweeted some pictures of that because that was kind of about sharing with other people who were interested that there was a protest going on in Sheffield, and it was fairly big, and connecting through hashtags with the kind of protests that were going on around the country. So that's one thing I tweeted. I direct messaged you something this morning because I had a question and there was a link, so it was convenient to direct message that. I've retweeted a couple of things that I found interesting related to ethnography and comics that someone else had shared somewhere else. I don't think I've tweeted a run or a picture from a run over the last couple of days, but I do tend to do that. If I've done a blog post, which is fairly rare, I would tweet the link out to that. So in terms of the putting out, I put stuff out there and that's the kind of thing I put out there. Reading, I just read my stream and dip into things that I found interesting, retweet them or like them or read them. My Twitter stream of other people's tweets is a mix of vaguely academic stuff, news, things about music. So it's a mix of things. So I haven't just got my Twitter account. It's a mix of things that I, at this point in my life, find interesting. So it's not, oh, I will only follow this kind of thing or this kind of person. A lot of the time it's a distraction from what I should be doing. Sometimes it's an insightful thing that lets me think about things that are relevant to what I'm doing broadly. Sparking off new thoughts and showing me stuff that I hadn't thought about. But I suppose I think of it like you would probably previously have thought of like an RSS feed of blogs and things. But it's certainly not just related to my academic work or my job or... And so I'd just constantly open it and be distracted by it and scroll through it to see if anything new was there. And then there'd be something maybe, I suppose, news about something Donald Trump's done. And I might follow that down and then find for 10 minutes I've been following links to different websites. Or there might be something that I'm not very good at saving things for later. I tend to kind of be led by them there and then, and I'm not very good at bookmarking things or going, oh, I'll go back to that when I've got time. I kind of end up finding that I'm doing it then and then having to get myself back to what I'm focusing on. So your question related to what you would see. So I suppose in summary, you'd see me occasionally putting stuff on and retweeting stuff. More often you'd see me looking at things and scrolling through the stream and clicking on tweets and opening links and looking at them and then maybe following a link to another thing outside of Twitter. So it very soon would become not Twitter. It would very soon become a news report that then had a link in it. But it would still be related to the act of looking at Twitter.
Just trying to tie that in with what you said you were doing last night and sharing a photo. So would there be a degree of circularity possibly within that where you've gone outside of Twitter to look at a news report or some article that's relevant to what you're currently doing and then come back into Twitter by creating a link to that or retweeting the original tweet?
Sometimes.
So
I don't...
out and back in, out and
back in? I suppose I don't share that much on it, so I don't tend to come back. I will kind of go somewhere else and then come back to not Twitter, come back to doing something else. So I don't very often bring something back in. I don't think. It often doesn't occur to me to bring things back to Twitter. Retweeting, I do some. I don't tweet loads and I don't retweet loads, but retweeting kind of is almost automatic because you're within the platform and it's easy. Finding an article interesting and decided to share it doesn't necessarily occur to me. If it does, sometimes I then have to try. You have to try and find the Twitter link to tweet. You can obviously copy the thing and take it into Twitter, but sometimes you find the tweet this link and then you do it and then it takes you to a page to log into Twitter because it's not quite linked up with the app on your phone or on your computer. Then I can't ever remember my Twitter password. Then I give up because trying to find the password is a pain because I've got so many different passwords for things. So things that I sometimes intend to tweet out don't end up happening because... And by the time I've met the obstacle, I can't be bothered going back and copying and pasting the link. And it tends to not necessarily be important stuff either. Well, what is important, I don't know. But by that, I mean it tends to be an article that... Let me think of something recently. Very recently, there was a program, a comedy program, kind of satire about 20 years ago called Brass Eye. I don't know if you watched Brass Eye, but there was a article on The Guardian about 20 years on, and I think I tweeted that on Twitter. Quite why I did that, I'm not sure, because I don't know what it's adding to anyone else's life. Why did I do that? But I just decided to tweet it because it was something that was important to me, I suppose, 20 years ago. I liked the program. Wasn't anything to do with my academic role or... I don't know. And I don't know why I chose Twitter instead of Facebook for that, to be honest.
Is there any sense in which tweeting that out in particular starts to build up for other people who might be following you a sense of who Chris Bailey is?
Yes, I think that's it, actually. There is. Because it's just bits and pieces of things that are important to you. So it's an identity thing, I suppose. Why do I want these people to know who I am? Not sure. I think that is absolutely it. If you tweet out a song or something you're interested in or something you're doing, it isn't necessarily adding something to someone else's life. It is telling them about what you like. Why would that be important? I'm not sure. I suppose at the beginning I said I use it for making connections with people. And so there's that kind of reaching out. There's more than one way of making a connection with a person, aren't there? Isn't there? They do similar academic work to you, or they are a teacher and you are, but equally are you the same kind of person as me? And it doesn't mean the same. It doesn't mean that you only get on with people who like the same television program you liked 20 years ago. It's not quite that simple, is it? But I suppose it gives a certain indication of your outlook on life. And that's what I appreciate seeing in other people. Maybe I'm more likely to listen to or read people's stuff if I think I've got stuff in common with them in terms of the way they see the world and their outlook. And so that kind of stuff builds up a picture of how they see people. It doesn't mean that if someone said they hated running, I would not contact them, because it's totally fine to not like the same things. And I could understand people hating running, to be honest, as well. But it's about a certain outlook and certain things you find interesting. And so it's,
Well, can I come back to two words that you've used and one that you've just repeated just recently? And one is connections and making connections and how what you've just described helps to achieve that. Why is that? Because you're not the only person to have said this. Why is making connections such an important thing? What does that achieve for you?
Now, is that just a human thing, as in social? It's like, why do we spend any time not just on our own doing stuff we want to do? So if we move away from thinking about Twitter and just think about why make connections as human beings... the answer seems to be, well, why wouldn't we? Because that's what we do, isn't it? We do make connections with people. We do want to. It doesn't answer why, but I suppose what I'm saying is that's the thing we do. Why do we do that thing? Because it makes us happy. because it's nice to share ideas with people. It's nice to have friends. Why do we have friends? Because we have the need as human beings to socialize with other people, and life isn't very interesting or fulfilling if you're on your own. I don't mean in a relationship with someone, but I mean if your life involves no other people, it feels lonely. Loneliness isn't a nice thing, so we seek connections with people to make us feel less lonely. I don't feel lonely, but that's probably why initially we would seek connections with other people. Why do we seek to extend those connections? Well, it's nice to meet other people who have other ideas and to spend our time in the world hearing other people's thoughts, sharing experiences with them. So I, like last night's protest, I didn't go on my own. I would have gone on my own, but actually I met with some other people and went with them. We just kind of stood next to each other. It wasn't like looking at each other and smiling and grinning at how good it was or anything. It was just being in the same place as other people. So I think that kind of human need to be in a place with people kind of extends to being online. So making connections with people adds something to your life. So I know you're thinking about professional development, but I'm not really saying it from that perspective. That is probably an element of that, but I'm not seeking other people who can develop me in terms of my career, although that might happen. I think it's just reaching out to other people. And it's nice to make, it's nice to be nice. It's nice to make connections with people. It's nice to share things. It's like, why would I share my runs on Strava? Or why would I share pictures on Instagram? It's nice that other people are interested, I suppose. People showing an interest in your life is nice. It's nice to be interested in other people's. I'm not sure the word nice is particularly helpful here, but I'm saying nice over and over again. Because the world is made up of people being bothered about what other people are doing, and Twitter is another way of making those connections with people as a community or society or any of those things. And sometimes you make connections and someone shares something and you're like, oh, I've not seen that thing, or I've not heard that thing. Or so I suppose sharing the brass eye thing might down the line make someone go, oh, what's that he's tweeted out? I've never heard of that, and goes to see it, and they might go and watch this program that was quite influential and interesting and good. And so it's not just about the people, it's about the things that we bring with us as part of our identities, I suppose.
Can I ask you a little bit more about that? The last thing you mentioned there, which was sharing something out, sharing your link to Brass Eye, and then somebody being interested enough to go and follow that up. What do you get out of that, if anything?
So I might not know if someone does that. If someone likes it, I know they've liked it, and likes... I often think about likes, because when I tweet something out and I get likes, it makes me kind of think, oh, that's good. But actually, why do I care? Or if on Instagram, again, I get lots of likes for a picture, it's like, well, why do I really care? But so Twitter, share that thing. What do I get out of it? Maybe nothing directly, as in I don't know if that's led someone down that path. I wouldn't expect someone to come back to me and go, oh, I'm really pleased that you shared that. That was really interesting to see, and I've gone and watched this. And that might happen, but I wouldn't be doing it to expect that. I wouldn't have dwelled, if we hadn't been sitting here in the interview, I wouldn't have even come back to the idea of the fact that I'd shared that. It just would be out there and then done. So I won't necessarily directly get anything out of it. I suppose there's the idea that you've kind of shared something on that people might find interesting. You've added to this kind of mass of stuff that's out there on the internet and promoted something that you found interesting. If you transfer the sharing brass eye thing to sharing something about the protest, you could maybe say something slightly more constructive might happen with that, in that it amplifies the voice of people who are protesting against a particular thing. In terms of sharing something to do with popular culture, I'm not sure it actually helps, other than it's like an advert for this thing. But what I get out of it, I don't know. I don't think I necessarily do get anything out of it directly or indirectly. I think it's just there. If I shared something to do with my academic work and someone came back and had a conversation about it, I'd get something back. But again, sometimes it's just putting things out there and making them visible to even one or two people. Because I don't really have a desire to have a million Twitter followers who hang on to my every word, and I don't think I'd like it. In fact, if that started happening, I think I'd probably delete my account, because I'd be in fear of people actually taking seriously the things that I was putting out there. So I suppose I think of Twitter as quite an ephemeral thing, although I'm conscious of what stays there. I tend to not really think of it as getting something back from that kind of thing.
Thank you. You've described quite a broad range of activities and quite a detailed, in a sense, level of involvement. This may be less relevant for you now, but given how time poor teachers often are, virtually everyone is, how would you rationalise that? You did say that some of the time it's distracting, it takes you away from the thing you're engaged in. So whilst that might not be teaching at the moment, do you think that there is sufficient benefit from the time spent to balance out that time expenditure?
I think I'm going to not answer your question very well, but let's see. So when I was
because
a teacher, no, not at all. Your questions are good. It's just I'm not sure, because I'm casting my mind back to being a teacher and Twitter, and because it wasn't something that I particularly thought about. I'm reflecting on something now that was a long time ago in terms of years, because I did use it differently to now. I think I became, when I was a teacher, I got to a point where I got really kind of wrapped up in teaching and thought about it a bit too much in terms of work-life balance. And I think actually Twitter contributed to me not switching off from teaching a fair bit. And I distinctly remember being in bed and participating in some kind of hashtag ed chat thing. And after a bit, I remember thinking, I'm going to delete my app, because it's taking over, and I'm finding myself getting stressed about things because I've got kind of information overload, and I'm trying to keep up with things to do with teaching, and I'm trying to keep up with things around, I suppose, yeah, professional development or keeping up to date with things. So for me, I think it became something that did begin to not actually take over from the time I was marking, because if I was doing teaching jobs, I actually wouldn't be checking Twitter. I would be getting on with those teaching jobs. It took over from my spare time, where actually I would have been better personally switching off and reading a novel or watching television or doing something that made teaching not be my whole life. And that's what I did. I ended up thinking, right, consciously, I need to stop doing this because I'm just making teaching everything. And so I ended up getting rid of the app Twitter, not the account. I would consciously check it sometimes then, but not be frantic about checking it. So I think when I say stress, I wasn't officially suffering from stress that was diagnosed, but I was feeling like anxious about not having free time. And you think, well, actually, I'm letting the certain jobs in teaching that take over your free time, marking, have to do it. There's certain things that you choose. So I don't think for me, Twitter was giving me things at that point that I needed. I think I was having things, and this is just a reflection now. This isn't something I thought about for a while. This is kind of on the spot thinking back to it. I think it was giving me cause to obsess over things that I didn't need to obsess over at the time. That's not Twitter. That's my use of it. It's not saying teachers need to beware of Twitter because it makes you do this. It was, no, at that point in my life, I was maybe finding teaching slightly overwhelming, but also I wanted to progress in teaching and I wanted to engage with these conversations that were happening and not be left out, or at least look at the conversations that were happening, not necessarily be a visible presence as part of them. But yeah, trying to keep up with everything, and it was actually quite unnecessary. So did Twitter change me as a teacher? I think it gave me some ideas to use in the classroom. Whether or not my classroom was better for having those ideas in it or not, I'm not sure. Because I think they were just different ideas. So what would I have come up with if I hadn't had Twitter? Well, something else. But again, I'm reflecting on my use of Twitter. I think people maybe use Twitter in ways that are, that help them with their professional development, that are different to how I used it. I think also Twitter's move, or the stuff that happens on Twitter, has moved on since I was using it. And I think there's different kinds of conversations going on Twitter to when I was using it as a teacher. So for my professional development as a teacher, I'm not sure I would advise people to use it in the way I did it, but I can see how there could be lots of benefit to teachers. And again, part of it is maybe making those connections and getting different ideas from people and seeing other ways of doing things. And I think schools can be potentially quite isolating places, or they can be quite bounded places where you might get people come in on insets and telling you certain ways of doing things, but you can be very much dominated by the kind of ethos of the school. And so I think it might be useful for some people to reach out to things like Twitter and find other ways of doing things and other voices and other kind of things outside. So I tend to think of Twitter being very positive, although my experience of it wasn't necessarily that positive. I'm much more positive about my Twitter usage now since leaving teaching, and I think I maybe use it in a slightly less obsessive way than I did when I was a teacher. But I think my way of using Twitter reflected the way I was about teaching at the time, and how I was stressed about teaching. I think I was tired, worn out. I think some personal stuff had happened in my life, which I don't need to go into, other than to say that I kind of threw lots of things into teaching rather than thinking about certain things in personal life. And so I can't talk about Twitter as a thing separate from my own experience of it.
Thank you. As you started to talk at the end there about professional development and your experiences, you mentioned INSET as one possible option, or one mechanism through which you received it. Can you say a little bit more about what your conception of professional development or professional learning is or are?
I suppose professional development for me, again, if I'm thinking about it from a teaching perspective, is anything that makes you better at doing your job or your role, or helps you move on to a different role within your profession. So professional development could be reading a book, reading a blog, having a conversation with someone else, attending a course, having some insight. I think there's a difference between professional development and successful professional development, as in you might go on a course and it doesn't tell you anything, or it doesn't tell you anything new, it doesn't help you. So I wouldn't say to constitute professional development, I wouldn't say the term professional development necessarily means that it's good. I think you can get, you can develop bad habits as well as good, can't you? So professional development would be anything that makes you, I said better at your job, but I suppose makes you change how you do your job or think about how you do your job, reflect on how you do your job. I'm saying the word job over and over again, so it must in my head be something to do with your employment. Or I suppose if you're an unemployed teacher, you could still have professional development in your role as potential teacher or currently unemployed teacher. So it doesn't have to be job, I suppose. It can be your own capabilities or your own skills. So what I haven't got is a coherent definition that you could write down in three sentences, because I've not thought about it and read around it enough to narrow it down. But my first thing when you think professional development is going on a course, I suppose, or having a meeting with someone. But I think Twitter is involved, reading stuff is involved, conversations are involved. The other thing is I've just done a seminar recently on professional development, or it was linked to teachers' professional development, so my ideas are kind of coloured by them as well, which the seminar wasn't created by me, so I'm being coloured by someone else's idea of what professional development is. Yeah, that's a long answer. You've got to transcribe this, I'm sorry.
It is a long answer, but you covered quite a broad range of topics, and perspective seems to be quite important. You had your own personal perspective, but one which is coloured by experience. So I think that does tend to be the case, in that there's a mix. You've got your own conceptions, and there are others which are brought in, and maybe institutional ones as well. And you mentioned that Twitter does sit within there as a one strand of that. How does it sit alongside the others? By that I mean, does it perform different functions, or does it sit outside them in a sense as being something completely different?
I, in my head, if we're thinking of it in professional development, it's just another thing within a whole range of things that you can do, but it's not a single thing. You can do it. So I could go on Twitter and I could find a blog post and I could read that. So Twitter has become just kind of a portal to something else. Or you could have a discussion on Twitter, a conversation with someone else or a group of people. Or you could make a statement and people could give you feedback on it. I don't particularly do all these things, but there are different ways in which I could see it being used. So Twitter, in those three examples, sharing a link, having a conversation, putting something out there and asking for feedback, they're three different things. So it's not, it's like you could go on a training course and it could be a multiple of different formats. Twitter is just one thing, and then that can be multiple things as well, I would say, but they all exist as possible means by which you can develop professionally. I suppose the Twitter thing tends to be more personally driven, so you might not be sent on a you might be sent on a course, or you could choose to go on a course, but often it's, if you have an inset day, it's not something you've chosen to do. You have to sit there because the head has got this person in to babble on about some rubbish that you don't need to know about, or something brilliant, but you don't choose that. It just happens to be useful or not, depending on what someone else has chosen. On Twitter, you can seek out something, just like you can seek out certain books, or you can go looking for things, or you can just be part of a set of people who have discussions and be driven by the discussion that's happening on Twitter at a certain point. I think I've forgotten what your question was, so I don't know if that answers it.
I'll just pick up where you were leaving off there, which is that you can use it to seek out, and you said seek out conversations or discussions or something else, but you mention it alongside books. So why, by and large, do people, those who use Twitter, go to Twitter rather than going to books?
I can only speak for me. Yeah. I would do it because it's in my pocket, it's quick, it's free, it's bite size. So you said time poor before, I think. There's something about the up-to-dateness of things, isn't there? It doesn't mean it's the best, but it's what's happening at the moment with other people. And so that tends to be a good starting point. But I think it's kind of, there's something enjoyable about using social media that isn't the same as going to a library and finding a particular book on something. And there's something about the time it takes to do that thing. You don't have to go to a library. You can download an ebook, but again, you probably have to pay for that. So there's the cost. So there's enjoyment, cost, time. Trying to summarize the areas, enjoyment, cost, time, and the kind of contemporary aspect of it, the up-to-dateness, the enjoyment, I suppose, is linked to, there's a kind of entertainment to it. It's also interspersed with random stuff as well. So you don't read a couple of pages of a book and then on page four there's some random thing about what's happening in the news at the moment, or so it's kind of, it allows you to, there's something nice about that distraction. And because you're doing it in your own time, reading a journal article in your own time can be fulfilling, but it can also be really hard work. Whereas there's something kind of more frivolous about opening your phone, looking at what's happening on Twitter. And there's something nice about not knowing where you're going to go when you do it, I think. You don't know what you're going to find out about when you open up Twitter. It's a bit unsure, a bit emergent. You don't know what you're going to read about in a book, but there's a book on the table here in front of us, a good book called Doing Sensory Ethnography. If I open that, I know what it's going to be about. If I open Twitter, my Twitter stream, I don't necessarily know what it's going to be about. So there's that element of surprise. But then I'm not necessarily approaching that because of professional development. Whereas I probably definitely would be approaching Sarah Pink's book to find something specific out. Twitter would be, I might be approaching it to be entertained or to find something out. Or to, I don't know. You don't know what you're going to get when you open up Twitter, which makes it maybe not the most efficient way of finding something out. But then it can lead you off in places you wouldn't necessarily expect.
That's a great answer, thank you. We're getting quite close to an hour, so I'm going to start to draw things to a close, and if that's okay.
That's crazy.
What?
How that's nearly an hour, isn't it?
I found really helpful there was the way that you articulated the different things that people seem to get from it, although they may talk about going there for and being there for professional learning or development, but also getting additional things. It's, and not many people have actually articulated those things, so that's really helpful. Thanks. Some of the notes that I've made during the course of this, you've talked about Strava and Instagram and Facebook. You've talked about using different devices or being in different places. And you mentioned you're an ICT coordinator. Do you think there are certain attributes, for want of a better word, that are more likely to lead to someone being successful in their use of Twitter for this particular context for learning? Do you think that without these attributes, you're unlikely to be able to access it?
I think there's a certain minimum level of ability needed, but I think a certain type of person were initially led to Twitter, and that may still be true, but I think it's more widespread. I'm not sure that quite makes sense, but it's more accessible, I think, because more people know about it. That doesn't mean, in terms of teaching, that there's a mass of people who are on it. It's like the students I was speaking to the other day when I was doing a seminar. Out of 34 students, none of them used, I don't know if any of them used Twitter, but none of them used it in a professional capacity. But I think many people, if they have a phone in their pocket, are able to get something out of Twitter. What they get out of it and how they use it would probably be different, but I think it is accessible to, certainly not everybody, but I think there might be, I think it's a fairly accessible platform. I mean, you've got Donald Trump using it, who, it's a shame that we think of the president of the USA being someone who is unskilled, isn't it? But I'm suspecting he's not a skilled user of IT, but you can put stuff out there quite easily. You can read other tweets. You can very quickly pick up how to use it. So I think it enables people who aren't necessarily up on technology to use it. I think it's fairly open in terms of the platform. Whether the people who use it, who you will come into contact with, are open is another matter, but that's not the question you asked. But I think the platform itself is quite, in my mind, most people could use Twitter. They might not be led to use it, but the ability to use it would be there. Having said that, I've worked with teachers who found it very hard to log into their emails. So there's a massive range of skill sets there, I suppose.
Yeah, it's not easy to identify those things. One of the questions that I'm trying to ask everybody, and try, not that I need to be consistent, but I'm just interested how you would deal with it if Twitter went away, if it fails for whatever business reasons or whatever, as these platforms often do disappear, what would your reaction be?
I've thought about this because I think about it with anything I use. This is online, so is storing things here, does my life depend on this being here? And if it does, I need to back it up. I've not sought any means by which to back Twitter up, because if it went, I would cope. There'd be some people I'd miss out on some people's ideas and thoughts, but there's nothing kind of, if it went, I'd probably get a bit more work done sometimes. It's an interesting question, because you think, well, if it wasn't there, that kind of helps highlight the value of what it is doing. And actually, I think I could do without it. But I think that's because some of the things that it does aren't really measurable, and you don't really see the outcomes. I think it's nice to make connections with people. So it would be sad if those things went, but equally they're not stopping me living my life or doing my job. There would be other means by which to connect with some people. But I could manage without it. there was a point at which I went without Facebook for about 6 months because, again, I was checking that too much. And I coped perfectly well without it. But actually, when I came back to it, I realised I'd missed some of the just keeping up with people things. So my professional development wouldn't have a big gap in it. I would probably be more focused on some things, actually, to be honest, if I didn't have Twitter there. But actually, I think I'd probably spend an equal amount of time on something else instead. I kind of check Twitter like I check the Guardian website, you know, to see what's on there, to see what's been updated. So there would be things that I would miss and things that I wouldn't. I think, but that's because of how I use it to share stuff that isn't necessarily that important. I think lots of people use it to have conversations that are valuable to them. And so they would probably miss it more than I do, actually. But for me, I would... It's not a vital part of my life, but it's something that I use and is useful to me and nice.
Thank you. There are hundreds of other questions I would love to explore with you, Chris, but we're out of time. But there is one thing that I ought to ask, and is there anything that you would identify that is significant from your experiences that I've not given you the chance to talk about?
I think the one there is one. Well, I'm not sure it's one thing, but there is a kind of aspect that I've not talked about, and that is kind of Twitter sometimes being very annoying and being Twitter as a thing kind of I don't know if it promotes or encourages or but seems to end up with a certain kind of discourse happening or a way of talking that I think is kind of symptomatic of actually social media and online things that doesn't necessarily directly involve my interactions with it, but I'm kind of aware of. So I'll give an example. That people, you want to edit this out now because I'm kind of babbling because I'm trying to think where to start. So you can chop this and not transcribe because it's pointless. I'll give an example. There was a tweet recently from Nick Gibb, education. What is he? I can't think of his exact title, but anyway, politician Nick Gibb. He'd visited a school. A nursery school. He tweeted a picture of himself, perhaps a selfie, with some children's handwriting on the wall. So they were like 3-year-olds, and it said something like, "I can fly." And they'd all written the same thing. And he put something like, "Look at this wonderful handwriting, these children can fly." He's obviously doing that for a reason. He wants to kind of show that maybe he's engaged with what schools are doing. He wants to show what he thinks is good practice. So there's all a load of stuff you could say about that, and you could look at that tweet and the purpose of that tweet. But I then was... So this came up in my feed because someone retweeted it. Someone retweeted it and was being quite critical about it. So they were very blank... I can't remember who it was, but they were kind of complaining about him doing this, saying basically an education... a politician in education shouldn't be putting forward a certain way of teaching. And then I looked at the other comments, and it was basically just people slagging off him, the school that had done it, and it became this very simplified, not even a conversation, just a series of tweets of people saying, children of that age shouldn't be doing that sort of writing. Or on the other hand, it's beautiful, this is wonderful, and a kind of very polarized, not even a discussion or a debate, but just a load of statements. It just made me think the issues around it were so complex. I would err on the side of not particularly thinking that handwriting for 3-year-olds was an amazing thing to be doing with children, although actually I don't really see a massive harm in it, because it's kind of preparing them for the fact that people write. And there were assumptions that the teacher who had done this didn't do any creative stuff with the children. They just kind of did handwriting all the time. There were people saying that this was wonderful and this is what children should be doing all the time. And it became very polarized very quickly. And there was no kind of consideration for the teacher whose children's work was on this tweet. There was no consideration of the children themselves. There was a tweet from the poor teacher in the midst of it going, "So sorry I couldn't meet you today, but I'm very proud of my TAs and all this." And it was just this horrible kind of everyone slagging each other off, people from both sides of this discussion that had become very polarized. And I think that's the kind of thing I don't like about Twitter, around education and around politics and around, you know, you see it. I think things are very complicated, and a picture of some children's writing from the age of three, can be read in so many complex ways. Nick Gibb was obviously using it for a certain kind of agenda, so he's not totally innocent in tweeting out the picture. But the way it was read was used as an opportunity for people to just go, "Oh, this isn't how children should be taught," or "Oh, this is how children should be taught." And it just left, it didn't feel like a debate or a kind of discussion. It was very polarized. And I think that's how I see discussions on Twitter happening a lot. And I think that's a shame, because I think it's a tool for expanding people's minds rather than arguing or narrowing down debates and discussions. So that's not me saying that we shouldn't have certain conversations about things. It's just there wasn't even a conversation there. There wasn't a debate. It was just people on what you might call the very progressive side slagging off this poor teacher's work in her class and making assumptions. People on the more traditional side going, "Isn't this wonderful?" And actually, you know, they were the supportive things that people were saying were actually kind of maybe more considerate of the teacher. So what I've kind of babbled there is an example of how something very complex was taken to be these very simple things. People got very extreme very quickly in a way that I can't imagine if they were in a room with each other or in a room with the teacher doing it, they would have got. I imagine if you walked into someone's classroom and there was some handwriting on the wall by some three-year-olds, there would probably be lots of other things happening that had happened in the room that showed different sorts of practice. People wouldn't have gone up to the board and up to the teacher and gone, "I can't believe you're doing this very formal work with these three-year-olds." And they wouldn't have dared to kind of criticize on that level. But on Twitter, in a very public forum where the teacher, the politician, other teachers can see it, it's somehow led them to have this confidence to be able to be very openly critical. So I think sometimes it can be not very nice, and I think that's typical of online stuff. I happened to accidentally look at the comments on the Sheffield Star newspaper website about the protest last night that I was at, that I've referred to a couple of times because it's in my head, and the comments on that were horrible. You know, it was very extreme, and it's like, don't read the comments. And I think sometimes Twitter is like the comments on an article. You can be very disheartened by reading the level of discussion that's going on. That doesn't mean that I don't think we should read things that people put on Twitter, because there's some great debates going on and some great discussions going on. But sometimes it's not very constructive or nice. And then if you have an opinion on it that's maybe more complex, more nuanced, I suppose. And if I was to write about what I really thought about that tweet with Nick Gibb, it would have a whole range of different perspectives in it. I'm not going to do it because I actually don't have the time to do that. And actually, I'm not really part of that debate. I'm just using that as an example, I suppose, of something that I saw recently that popped into my head earlier. So certain voices don't get heard, and they would maybe be the voices who aren't on the extreme, who either don't want to be shouted down or haven't got the time to put in to making those more complex, longer arguments. So, yeah, I think that says stuff that I haven't said. That's absolutely
fine. Can I just try to, I guess, ask you to clarify whether or not it's Twitter that you consider to be more responsible for these kind of things? Because you also mentioned online and the Star website.
Yeah.
So is it the online world or is it Twitter more specifically, do you think?
I think it's the online world. I think Twitter, because of its short, brief, the nature of it, doesn't lend itself to certain more long-form types of discussion. I'm not sure it's meant to do that. I'm not sure it's able to do that. I think it is able because you can link to other things, but it takes you out of the conversation. You can take a photograph of a longer piece of text, but I'm not sure it's meant to or good at doing that. And so I think there's a danger in if we look at Twitter as the whole picture or the whole story about how a conversation is happening, then it would miss things. I think it has a potential to simplify. So we need to look elsewhere for where those more complex discussions are going on. They happen in academic papers, they happen on blog posts. But if we just look at Twitter as a thing in itself, it potentially limits the scope of the conversations that are going on, or it limits the parts of the conversations that we see. And I don't necessarily, having followed certain arguments on discussion on Twitter, I'm not sure if it's possible to have expansive arguments. I wonder if it leads to things being closed down too quickly because you're trying to reply in a tweet. You can reply in multiple tweets, but it just kind of, it's not the same, is it? I think Twitter does certain things quite well. I wouldn't dare say that I know what Twitter does well or what it doesn't do well, but I think it needs people to look at what it does well, what it doesn't, how it leads to certain types of discussions. And that's not me talking necessarily about certain arguments winning. It's about whatever your argument is, I think it leads you to need to argue in a certain way, perhaps. I haven't been involved in arguments, so again, I haven't tried doing this, but it's just things I've seen because I don't really use Twitter in that way. But I do sometimes think, if I were to involve myself in this discussion or argument, would I be able to do it here? Possibly not. If I wanted to involve myself in commenting on that Nick Gibb post, I would probably want to say a lot to be able to say everything I had to say about it, and I'm not sure that Twitter would allow me to do it. I might be able to write a blog post on it, and actually it's not that important for me to involve myself in that discussion, but just as an example. So I think the people that I tend to connect with are people who don't predominantly use Twitter to have their discussions. They maybe use longer form things. So they might go, hey, I've written this blog post about this, or I've written this journal article about this. And so Twitter is a means of me finding out about that thing and then going and reading it elsewhere, rather than me actually having discussions that are in themselves fulfilling on Twitter. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's not to say that if I've had a conversation with someone on Twitter, it's not been fulfilling.
But it's, in case anybody has. Yeah. Chris, that's been a fascinating discussion. It really is. Some really insightful comments and a different perspective, which is really, really important for me. So thanks very much indeed.
Thank you for asking me.
I'm now going to press pause or stop.
So I'd like to close by saying a big thank you once more to Chris for being so generous with his time. to thank him for his observations and insights, and repeat my invitation to any listeners who might like to be involved in the project. Just catch me on Twitter or in the CPD in 140 blog.